Are you hungry?
Good thing, because it's time for your weekly slice of Tres Leches, your new favorite auditory treat where the zest of Latino culture meets the effervescence of queer narratives, with your hosts, Johnny, Ian, and Juan. Today, we're going to get into the nitty-gritty, baby, people's obsession with the end of times. We're going to talk TV shows, books, everything that is end of the world. And at the end of the episode, we're going to get into your wonderful spilled milk reactions to the Oscar nominations. What did you think? Because we're going to tell you what we think coming right up.
Yeah, I was just going on a bit of an explanation as to why I think what I'm about to suggest is like what we should do.
What?
Is the second we say record, all of a sudden, and then there's like an energy stop. And I, as a producer on this and co-host, I would like us to press record before we start actually doing anything.
Right.
Because we light up is when we don't tell ourselves to start doing something. It's in the conversation that's happening before. And that's just my preference. Like, I like when people are talking about something and you go, I wonder what they're talking about. And then we go into something and it just kind of hooks you in this way.
Do you notice how much louder you get when we do press record?
I think I'm just trying to prove a point. As we know, I get very passionate and emphatic when this has to come down to like, maybe I wasn't heard as a child, you know?
You know, I actually think it's much more practical. I think it's, we our ears get attuned. It's like Cubans, why Cubans talk loud. You get used to a certain amount of oral feedback in your own ear.
From your own voice.
Yeah, you get used to a certain amount of like what I sound like in a room.
Yeah.
And I think you get a Pavlovian effect when you speak loudly. People do hear you better, so they might listen better. So you get positive feedback for speaking loudly. So then in turn, you speak more loudly. Does that make sense?
Sing out, it Louise. Does. Sing out, Louise. It does.
I've always thought that because I've had my hearing tested because I too speak loudly. My whole life, people have said, my mom is always like, Juan, you're screaming.
Interesting.
My hearing is in good shape.
But here's the thing is my hearing is in good shape too. So while I buy what you're selling me right now and like that would make sense, I just think it's about paying attention. It's about going like I love how loud I can get, and I love that I have friends who will tell me how loud I can get. And I
Juan did that one episode. He goes, "You're yelling! You're yelling!
Yeah, you're screaming! You're screaming!"
All right. Well, welcome to another week here at the Tres Leches Studios, which is really just our homes, wherever we might be, coming to you live. Well, not really live, kind of, sorta. How are you boys doing?
Oh my god. Go. Yeah, you go. I've got
Ian,
COVID, so I'll save my yelling in like 10 minutes on COVID after you, Juan.
You know, I am doing okay. I am almost done with Barbara Streisand's audiobook, and it's a marathon I am trying to fix, and I am slowly becoming her. Like, I feel like every time I start to ask for something, it's now the way that Barbara would be asking for it. And I leave with more of her personality.
Yeah. It's 48 hours long, isn't it?
And
it sure is.
Yes. And I'm about 36 hours in. Which seems like not that much,
no,
but
it's more feels than like a triumph. It was telling me, it was like, you have 36, 34 hours left. I was like, in what world am I going to get through this? Like,
it's a lot. She does something, and we should have dedicated a show to her.
Oh my god, I would love to.
But she does something that I love, which is when she kind of says an aside that maybe is not in the book. So she'll be like, I went to lunch with him, and from across the room, I saw Marlon Brando, and he came up to me. And he touched me on my lower back. He really did that. That's true. I love those slides that are really not in the book. I'm obsessed with
that's
them.
That's funny.
I adore Barbara Streisand. But the audiobook is a delight. I'm hanging on every word. And it is It is audiobook Adderall because it keep when I'm listening to it, I can't do anything else. I'm so alert and awake, and I'm hanging on every single word.
Fascinated by her whole life.
And if you're listening and you're part of the demographic of our listenership, which is pretty young, I will say I've looked at the numbers. I know a lot of your ages.
Well,
Barbara Streisand is an icon. You know, if you don't know who she is, you probably should pick up the book, maybe do some YouTube Barbara Streisand performances, and you will learn who the doll is.
I just sent you one, actually. So, my friend Doug Middlebrook, who is also another Barbara stan, texted me in the morning, like the second day, and was like, hey, I heard you're sick. Like, watch this. It'll make you feel better. And it is a medley of Barbara. She comes out and she does like a Hello Dolly medley. Mm. And I had never seen it before. I'm obsessed with Hello Dolly. Mm. That movie, she is literally like one of the only voices I ever listened to as a kid. And you both are going to have such a treat watching it. It is insane. It is insane the way she commands a stage and the way she just uses her voice and her fingers and her hands.
This is tangential, but is Doug Middlebrook Ariana Grande's best friend?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Because I was like, why does that name sound so familiar? And then I realized the other day I was on X, formerly known as Twitter, and I saw a picture that said, Ariana Grande's best friend, Doug Middlebrook, stuns a new photo. And it's it's a sexy
it's a
selfie.
Sexy
and
selfie.
I'm like, oh, it's a sexy selfie. Selfie. I'm like, work. We're doing best friends now. I love that.
Yeah. He's all grown up.
And he, yes. my Dougie. No, I've known Dougie since he moved here from South Africa. It's such a fascinating story.
South African. We love.
Yes. Because at one point, Frankie and a bunch of friends from Mamma Mia had Broadway in South Africa. Frankie Grande. Yes. Excuse me. Just to be clear, I'm the one who's why do I need to give a last name?
Because some people don't know who you're talking about.
Because people don't know who we're talking about.
But then it feels like I'm like, you know.
Name dropping?
Exactly.
Well.
Opposite. I think it's more name droppy when you don't say the last name. Because like I was with Hoda Kotb. It was the most exciting day versus like Hoda and I were grabbing lunch.
No, it's like, if someone's here, my favorite is when someone's like, I'm gonna do what you just did, but I'm gonna make it mine, which is Hoda and I didn't say it like that. Frankie, it's way more casual.
No, I put it on.
To make a point, which I understand.
Oh Lord.
But yes, Frankie Grande and I were in Mamma Mia together. And long story short, Doug Middlebrook, he got like a scholarship, this organization called Broadway in South Africa. Hmm. But they would go and travel to South Africa, teach them choreography. And Doug was one of the like students who won the chance, like, come to New York for a summer. And so he stayed with Frankie. Wow. And that's when I don't think I was in Mamma Mia still, but you know, we all stayed very close.
Yeah.
And I've known Doug since he like was, God, I think he was like 18 or 19 years old. And he's like part of our New York life. That's and we nice. Love him. And he's one of the girls, like a First Wives Club doll. Like he could come and have dinner with us. He would actually be a great guest to have on this pod.
Well, just you heard it here first. He would be a great guest on the pod.
Doug, so you're
coming
invited.
Coming to a ear near you. You saw how I did it before he ended. I was like, oh, she's hearing. Well, that's lovely. Your New York life, the Ian Padgett story. How is your New York life going right now with your COVID?
It's, you know what? It's actually really okay. My dad won't listen to this, but if he did, he'd be like, Ian, I told you to get the booster. And he is so right. Like, I should have gotten the booster, but guess what? People who have gotten the booster have also gotten COVID after. So whatever. But it has been.
Yeah. I think it mitigates it.
Yeah, exactly. But it's been super mild. I noticed I was feeling some fatigue and just unmotivated to kind of like do anything. Mm. And then my throat was getting swollen. And so I got an appointment to the doc that day that like it was getting, I could gradually feel it getting worse. And so they were like, oh, like, let's just take a test to see if it's like viral. And that same test where they do a swab, I guess they can, it's also testing for COVID. And so we're going down the list of like possible other things. And then he was like, you have COVID. And I was like, oh, great. And then he prescribed me Paxlovid. Yeah, I was like, thank God.
It's something else.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, really,
although an STD would have been easier also, because then I could still go out and be with the world.
Just
you know what I mean?
Not have sex, which I don't know. What's worse, COVID or?
Well, I don't have sex anywhere. So it's not like that changes anything.
Oh.
But that's okay.
It is okay. Hey, that's okay. Hey,
it is.
It's okay. I just don't want
to get into it. So it's been really mild, and which is such a mind fuck because we're, you know, 3 or 4 years later, and you, it's just weird that it's kind of like a cold or like a flu in its way. And the regulations around like, hey, well, when you start to feel better, just wear a mask to kind of like not spread it past once your symptoms go away. But also if you want to test, like if there was a lot of kind of leeway there now, which I was surprised at. But it makes sense because it is very like you can live with it. I like went for a walk yesterday on the West Side Highway because I was just, I couldn't stay cooped up so much. On the one hand, I like when someone tells me like you have to stay home and like there is nothing else you need to do. And so I've enjoyed being kind of in my apartment and all my furniture is here now. And so it really does feel like a home and that's been really nice, but I am looking forward to being able to, you know, get some blood a pumping again and like kind of work out and just kind of see my friends. But it's been good. And I mean, you can hear me. I don't even sound like I'm sick, or do I?
No, you sound normal, good.
I think. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, staying home actually has, you know, it gives me a perfect segue into what we're going to be speaking about today on the pod. And that is the end of days. I've just been seeing so much. I don't know if it's just my timeline or just I've been, you know, doom scrolling a little too much on X since I'm off of Instagram. But I've seen a lot of like the end is near.
Yes.
My stepdad even sent a group text to the family that was like, you know, my parents are Christian, so that like, you know, he's like, the rapture is coming. Please redevote your lives to Jesus, and just so I want to be in heaven together. And like, and then
my shoulders just got an inch closer to my ears.
And then you know, this new movie that came out over the holidays, Leave the World Behind, with Julia Roberts and Mahershala Ali, Ethan Hawke, is, you know, it's always on people's minds. And I wanted to ask you guys if you have any thoughts about the end of the world.
Johnny, first of all, okay, the text message, your family text message from your stepfather asking everyone to prepare for the second coming of Christ and afterlife, that is a lot. That's a lot for me. Oddly sweet, but a lot. But yeah. Johnny, yes. sameforreal.com.edu, the end of the world, the Armageddon, has been all over my TikTok and my Twitter. Like, the algorithms are totally perturbed. They're unnerved. I'm unnerved. It's a lot. Like, it's, and there are weird conspiracy theory videos, and then also like very science-based climate change end of world videos. It's all over the place. But I will tell you, the end of the world is always on my mind. It is always on my mind, for real. Ever since I was a little kid, when the concept of the end of the world was introduced to me, I want to say it was around fourth grade, when I was in Catholic parochial school, they may have mentioned it. And then I watched like a Nostradamus hour-long special on History Channel or Discovery, something boring. But once I had words for the concept of it, I've been obsessed with it ever since. Obviously, I'm kind of looking forward to it because I'm a fatalist and you all know that. But, you know, when I was a kid, like, and growing up, movies like Independence Day and Armageddon, of course, those kind of end of days films just fascinate me because it kind of it scratched like a corner of my brain, like an itch that I had to kind of think about how this is going to happen. And it used to be all kind of very like religion and kind of science and space based, but now it's even might be scarier because it's kind of just like, yeah, we're doing this just to ourselves. So, you know, but these stories, we're compelled. We love them. Like, we as a human race love these end of day stories. And I think it's because we are so scared of it and it's exciting and overwhelming. You know, that's why these movies do well and they're still done, you know.
Did you ever play video games that were kind of World War Z-ish or, you know, kill zombies? I know the answer, but I'm asking maybe before you met me, like if you played video games.
No, my video game, era was like more Sonic the Hedgehog, and then Nintendo 64, and like James Bond. I wasn't playing like
we were on missions. POV, we were on adventures, like Crash Bandicoot style.
Crash Bandicoot, exactly. It was not so boyish, not so like.
I feel like
zombie
apocalypse, or like I feel like it's a beautiful like first date question when you don't really know someone. Like, what would you do in a zombie apocalypse?
Oh my God, should we role play?
Yeah. I'll be the waiter.
Answer going to be different when you're on a date with from versus when you're not on a date?
Oh, well, I guess that would be different because you'd be acting differently on a first
date. Like putting on a show. Like if I'm on a date and someone asks me about a zombie apocalypse, I'd be like, you know, I'm going to fight for what's mine. I'm going to like grab my animals. I'm really going to like really try to do a good job. You know, like I'm a serious person.
Okay, so that's going to be
versus like my real life answer is I'm going to just grab a knife. Okay, and stab myself.
Hold for role play. Okay, so that'll be the chicken pie art for you, and you're just going to have water. Okay, great. I'll be right back with that. Oh,
Thank you.
I'm on the date. Okay.
Thank you.
Ian, thanks so much for like coming. This has been such a like a fun. We've been trying to do this for a while.
I'm so happy it worked out.
That we got together,
and I'm so happy you came all the way from Bushwick.
Yeah, you know, and I love Chelsea. This is such a nice area. Yeah. You know, I was just watching Last of Us. I'm way behind. And I was thinking about a zombie apocalypse. Like, what would I do? Like that beautiful storyline with those two like guys like in the woods.
Yeah.
What do you think? Are you the kind of person you think you'd fight or just like give in to the zombies? What's your plan?
Okay, so I've thought about this. I actually just watched World War Z. So I think I'm just going to steal like storylines that felt like they could work for me. I'd hope I'd live somewhere by water or like on an archipelago, right? Mm. So like the only way you could get to my house was like getting on like a small little boat. And so if that was the case, I would just make sure to burn the boat that would bring anyone over to my island, and the zombies couldn't get to me. And I'd hopefully also have like a helicopter pad, and then I'd only go pick up like my mom, my dad. I'm sure my sister would be taken care of. She'd be fine. But like, I'd see if I could get her on like maybe the second trip. You know what I mean? And then I would just be really, really quiet and stay there forever. What about you?
Wow. What? I'm just going to be completely honest. I would grab a butter knife and stab myself and let the zombies have at it. Cause there's no way I can get enough hyaluronic acid on a helicopter with me to last for the amount of years I've got left. I would have no fight.
I know what you mean.
To be honest. Now imagine saying that on a date. That would not go well. But that is the truth of what I would say. I wouldn't be able to know. It's just me.
You won me over when you picked butter knife. I was like, okay, he's going suicide, but he said butter knife, so he's camp. So I'm interested. You know what I mean?
Exactly. I want it to be camp.
Yeah, yeah, I like that.
It's gotta be comical, like
gotta do it a couple times. It's like not
a couple times.
Yeah.
A butter knife? I chose a butter knife. It's a Barbara Streisand line reading of that.
And like as you're doing it, the zombie comes in, he like looks at you and he's like, are you trying to kill yourself with a butter knife?
He's like,
and you're like, I am. He's like, okay, I'm gonna let you keep doing that. And then like he like doesn't pick you.
I love that the zombie speaks instead of being like
yeah. The exactly. only thing that brings a zombie out of zombiness is camp. Mm. He's like, if anything camp is going on, the zombie just like stops and is like, huh.
He's like, you ate that.
Oh my God.
Exactly.
And I'm going to eat you. I remember I brought this up. Kevin Sullivan, not a friend of the pod because he doesn't listen, but but he did say, you know, I would just like give in to the zombies, kind of like what Juan was saying. And I feel like the answer says a lot about a person when they give their, you know, well, this is what I would do. And I think it has a lot to do with like the end of the world has a lot to do with our mortality and how people are always thinking about death, because the end of days is technically, you know, and I feel like sometimes when people are like, I would fight, I would ration, I would get a bunker. Those are people, in my opinion, that are afraid of dying, that are afraid.
They do CrossFit.
Either
Wait,
that
what did you say?
I that do CrossFit, he said. I do think that there's like a people have like this superhero complex for sure. And I do, but I do think there are people that are afraid of dying, that are afraid of, you know, things coming to an end. Whereas like when I think about a zombie apocalypse or nuclear disaster, I think, please allow me to be in the blast radius. Please allow me to be eaten by the zombie I think it's good. I think I'd rather be done with life at a point where I'm like, I don't need to know what happens after the disaster.
Of course, of course. But the question was, what would you do if the zombie apocalypse was happening and it wasn't like, I mean, sure, you'd be like, I would like to place myself for the...
That what? Ian's like, I would... First of all, you took me out with archipelago. Like, I don't think I've heard that word since like eighth grade.
You know, like a conglomerate of islands, yeah, if
no,
you will.
No, of course. But cutting off no, like no boats, in or out, she said. Mm-mm. But I'll have a helicopter for my desired, you know, rescues.
Yes, yes. The grinder hookup. You never know. Maybe there's someone...
I know, I'm going to need the... Only top, honey.
And that only top is hiding away in Nova Scotia on another archipelago where, like, you know, you can only get to and fro by boat or something.
That would be a gay disaster movie, The Last Living Top in New York.
Hashtag Nova Scotia.
Okay, let me get my lawyer on the phone, right?
Let me write that down.
Get that IP.
Let me get my legal pad.
No, patent. But it's funny because the end of days comes up in so many different ways. Like when we're in places of war, like it's never not been part of our society. Like back in the day, it's like, well, you know, the Russians and they're going to blow us up and we're all going to die. That's why we need bunkers in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
And then before that, you know, the British are coming. Like things have always been kind of... And you know, I think it's always kind of on people's mind. I remember when I first saw Independence Day. Do you remember that?
Yes, I love that movie.
For our young listenership, that is a movie that came out in, I think, like 1996, 7, on like 4th of July weekend. And it was just about the aliens invading. And that's just another layer of like... What's going to happen if that happens?
1996.
Oh God, I'm good. And I remember, you know that scene where they're all standing. This is a spoiler alert.
96 is a good year.
But you know the scene where they're all standing on the top of the building and they're all like, "Yes, come get us!" And then they're like,
and there's the one girl who like wants to have the alien. She's like, "I'm here for you," and she's holding the. She has like a sign.
Yeah. And then they just like blow up the entire building. I remember that traumatized the shit out of me as a kid. I was like, oh, so aliens are not going to be friendly?
Yeah.
One thing about me is I'm not going to be that person. I'm going to run away. You know what I mean?
Right.
Or I'm going to go like, mom, dad, let's go to the house in the Hamptons and let's hold each other while we watch the tsunami. Hit us. That's Deep Impact. I love Deep Impact. Did you guys ever see Deep Impact?
You've got so much fight in you.
It's very much me and Juan are the old people in the
years ago. I had that.
We're the old people in the Titanic on the bed.
Ever since I've become 27 plus, yes, exactly.
Which is so funny because Juan's like,
now that I'm 27 plus,
yeah,
I'm not fighting.
It's hilarious though because like Juan's like, if I'm going down, I'm going down fighting, but about beauty and I'm like vanity. But like when it comes to like actually trying to stay alive,
yeah.
You're like, I don't give a fuck.
Well, she's like, if I'm gonna be here, I'm gonna try and look as cute as possible. But if there's no guarantee, bitch.
If I have to be here, if no one's gonna come and like end this.
Path of least resistance. You know, I get it.
I think that Independence Day and Armageddon, the film Armageddon, which was pre-2000, right? Or was it
was 2 years later. It was 1998,
prepared
actually.
Prepared us for the Y2K frenzy. Yeah. Was it 1998? Yeah. Okay, there we go. So these films were a part of the buildup that I think put a real fear in us and in the national and international psyche when the Y2K debacle was hanging over our heads. Yeah. And it gave us like a visual representation of what the end of the world could be, although Y2K was a totally different kind of threat. But it just made us start to think about the end. What happens when there's no electricity anywhere? What happens when we've lost contact with no phones, no internet, no nothing? And I remember the Y2K frenzy in school. Yeah. Like I was just so aware of it.
You were in school at that time?
It was so. Yeah.
School. Oh, I see. I wasn't even born.
Yeah, you were in pre-K? Yeah, no, I was giving.
Maybe I'm confused. Maybe I just want to, I just hold on. Sorry to interrupt, but we're going to just kind of dissect that little moment there. Like, were you trying to do what I did last week to Juan?
No, I don't know. I don't need to copy you. If that's what you're getting at.
I either missed it, but I was just like, wait, what do you, wait, I guess I missed the joke. Was there a joke?
I don't know.
I'm being,
the joke is that I was, that Johnny was too young to remember being in school when Y2K happened. He was just a baby. Then he would be, if that were the case, he would be 26 today instead of the 43, which he really is.
See, that was my confusion. Because I thought we were all 27 plus.
Well,
got it.
Johnny being a decade younger than me and calling him 8 years older than me.
I don't think you're older than me, are you? No, you're younger than me.
I'm 30.
From 1987. Shit. Wait, Juan, that was an amazing take.
So was I. I was born in 87.
We're all born in 87.
Oh, shit. Yeah. I thought you were like 84.
Ooh, 84.
I think you're younger.
See how bad I am at math? It took me like 2 seconds to be like, wait, 84 is before.
But this is what I'm saying is that's why I was confused by Johnny's.
No, I'm teasing.
Doing that because I was like,
I literally thought you were within the same high school bracket, but I thought you were a little bit younger.
Oh, that's sweet of you.
But do you guys want to know where I spent the actual millennium? Where I counted down to the potential end of the world
on a cruise
with whom I was. Oh. It's so good. We already mentioned her.
Oh, today?
I was at the Barbara Streisand concert in Las Vegas.
Wow.
Look at that.
Barbara Streisand gave a concert. And on December 31st, we counted down with her. Like she was literally like, with all there is, why settle for? And counting down. It was amazing.
Wow.
But the night after, on January 1st, we saw Bette Midler.
Whoa.
Barbara Streisand on December 31st and Bette Midler on January 1st. Is that the gayest thing you want in your life?
You peaked too early.
Yeah,
Juan.
That's beautiful.
Where do you go from there?
That is your end of days.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I'm so depressed now.
Them like they used to.
I've done it all. They were in perfect voice, both of them. It was so spectacular. Bette Midler was making so many jokes about all the people because she was also doing a concert on the 31st. So Bette was, you know, making jokes about the people who came to see her the night earlier so they could be with that other bitch on New Year's Eve.
Oh my God.
It was out of a dream. And I was very much prepared for the fact that it would be the end of the world, but I would be doing it at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas with Barbara Streisand. And I took great comfort in that. And I was wearing, I remember even kind of picking my outfit thinking, if this is what I'm wearing for the end of the world, I'm with Barbara and I'm wearing, I had my little Kenneth Cole shoes, brand new, and a DKNY tie that I had bought.
What tie? Oh my God.
It was, yeah, DKNY. Tie black on INC International Concepts shirt, black dress shirt that I mixed together with like a gray and black jacket with it had little polka dots. It was black, but it had like little.
Is there
gray
a picture
polka dots.
Of this somewhere in the house? Like, do you guys have that somewhere?
Yeah, I'm gonna find a picture of it, and it was just like I had really prepared for the idea. Like, if I'm going out, this is the way to go out. I was aware of the magnitude of how lucky I was to be there. And the tickets, which seemed like an incredible amount of money, which it was a good amount of money then, I think they were like $375 each for Barbara. And I remember looking at the ticket and being like, wow, my mom spent so much money on this.
Aww.
If there were a way to know, like, okay, definitively, like there's a meteor landing. We've got 44 days, 13 hours. That last thing that I want to do, I want it to be something that has to do with the musical theater or music.
Yeah.
I've thought about that before, you know? I want it to be like listening to music or a concert or something like that. And then the butter knife, of course, right before the end. But, you know, it makes you think like, what do you really, really like in this world? Or what do you really, really love in this world? And I love McDonald's and I love musical theater. So those are the things I want.
if it was the end of the world, would you rather be eating or having sex, and why?
That's so hard, Johnny.
How are you gonna do this to us? Yeah.
What are you gonna do?
I'm gonna eat. I'm gonna make sure that I am full on my belly, because you know what? I can just jerk off. I can just like handle that by myself after I've eaten. Do you know what I'm saying?
Okay.
I can use my imagination, but you can't imagine like chicken pad thai. You can't imagine Vietnamese food. You can't imagine a steak. You can't imagine a papaya salad. Do you know what I mean? Chicken parm.
Like No, you're right.
Those are just your last meal?
Well, those are like things that I just order a lot when I try to treat or reward myself. And like chicken parm is one of those, you know, but or like a really good burger and fries. Like,
Well, you know, if this is the question, I'm just going to add an addendum to your question. You asked whether you would rather be eating or having sex. If I don't want to be hungry. So if it's the choice of being like hungry, then I'm going to choose food. But if I have eaten within like 4 or 5 hours,
well, you're going to die. So it, like, it doesn't matter if you're hungry.
But I don't want to die hungry. I don't want that feeling at the end, like, ooh, I wish I had a cracker right now.
Right.
Ooh, yeah, a couple of saltines would be good. I don't want that feeling. But if I've had food today, that day, even breakfast, okay, a little something in the morning, I'm going with sex. And you mentioned, you know, Ian, you mentioned like wanting a papaya salad. I need somebody in my papaya. as the curtain is coming down.
Do you have someone
and
that
I just
it would
want to
be
kissing someone and holding someone?
Just like I asked Ian, what food? Who? What man would be the?
He'd have to be from Bushwick, that's for sure.
I can't say who it's going to be. I can't say. Oh. I can't say because I'll cry. I can't say.
Oh. Well,
I can't say, but I have two in mind. I'll give you my celebrity one because I can say without too much stress. My celebrity one would be definitely Jacob Elordi.
Wow, baby girl.
That's who I want with me in the speaking voice in the last couple of minutes on Earth. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what I want.
Yeah.
How old is he? 24?
That's what I
26?
Want.
He's not 27 plus. Can't be.
Okay.
I actually don't know.
Of course.
Can someone look that up? I'd love to know.
Yeah. So I think Jacob Elordi. I mean, no, or, you know, or just any. I want one of my boyfriends. I want one of the men that I've loved, truly. Someone, it could be my first boyfriend. You know, it could be the guy I lost my virginity to in high school.
26 years old.
Just someone that, to be like, oh, 26. It's you.
Yeah.
Again,
yeah,
so you know that.
Now here,
yeah, I was going
it's
to
the
say
the Barbra Streisand I was taking gonna, over in me, the romance,
yeah.
I was gonna say sex. I'd rather be having sex because sometimes when I am having sex, I'm like, I would rather be no place in the world but here. I truly, this, you know, please,
it's, yes, it's a very present, definitely the most present you can be.
But sometimes you don't feel that way. And so that's why I'm going to go with a burger and fries, because I know that when I'm with a burger and fries, baby, even the worst diner burger and fries, or sometimes it's the best, will hit the spot more than a lot of these other people can hit the spot.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Won't it?
Yeah, exactly. That's why I'm saying, like, feed yourself and then take care of yourself. You know what I mean?
I was going to say I'd get fed by Jacob Elordi and then have burgers afterward, and then boom, end of the movie.
Wow, you guys really, I understand. No, yeah, I don't.
You don't see it for Jacob is what you're saying.
I think that Jacob and I we'd be great friends, and I think if we were on set together, we would have like a ball of a time, and we would honestly become like laddie friends, like we'd be best pals, but I just don't find him attractive in that way. There's something about, like, I think for now that's what I'm saying, like, we might become best friends, then all of a sudden I'm like, oh wow, maybe we should be married.
But he's not really your type. He's not your like tall vibe thing. You know, he's like tall and like, you know, it's not really your vibe overall.
What's Ian's vibe?
Exactly, Juan, what is my vibe?
Your vibe is shorter, compact, not necessarily short, but shorter. I would say 5'10 and under. Compact. Mm-hmm. Brunette typically, although you've had blondes, but if you had to go easier, I would choose brunette. I would choose this. I would choose a very like ethnically ambiguous, but is he Filipino? Is he French? Like what's going on here? A little bit of that, CrossFit vibes, not too hairy, 25, 27. We're 27 plus, so he has to be 27 under, 27 negative.
But 21
I'm skewing a little older than that these days, but yes, normally correct.
If I had to, like, average, a tin type, a stereotype, I would go with some ice for both. It would be McDonald's more specifically for me, but yes, burger and fries.
She's going out an American treasure.
I know. It's what I want. It's that last kind of hurrah of indulgence and of just
Americana. Yeah, you know, I get it.
An Oreo McFlurry, two apple pies.
Well,
my McDonald's order.
Yeah.
Iconic. It's an iconic order. It is a 10-piece chicken McNugget meal, supersize, aka large, with a Sprite or a Diet Coke.
Sprite.
A deluxe quarter pounder, no pickles, two apple pies, and an Oreo. Wow.
Damn, bitch.
That's the order.
Johnny, what's yours?
The water retention in that? I was going to say like just a Big Mac. And
yeah. You know, funny enough, I didn't know, like as a kid, all I ever got were like Big Macs, Big Macs, Big Macs, Big Mac. And then someone was like, wait, what are you getting? And I was like, this was like in the last 7 years. And I forget who it was. They're like, you've never had a quarter pounder? And I was like, what is that? They're like, that's the size of the other burger that is offered there. And I was like, no, I always get the Big Mac because it's double. They're like, no, you're not having a real burger at McDonald's. And then I had one. And wait, Johnny, do you remember when you and I went to that McDonald's and we went in New York? Yeah. Do you remember that?
I think we took an edible or...
Yeah, we were definitely stoned. And we ordered on the computer and like that's when the computer thing was there. And like, you know, it was just starting.
That's when the computer was just starting, yeah. Oh my
exactly,
God.
Exactly, exactly. The beginnings of...
Being stoned, seeing that for the first time, it's like, oh my God, are we in the future?
We went in.
Oh my God, this gigantic iPad.
One of my favorite things.
It actually works well. Yeah.
It's more efficient than anything else.
Oh, than people?
Yeah.
At McDonald's, sometimes you're like, oh, yes. Sometimes McDonald's was not always serving the efficiency. And so I was like, well, I'm going to go to Burger King.
Oh, work.
Ooh.
Okay.
Damn.
Well, I mean, I would like to pose the question to the audience as well. If you're sitting there in your car, wherever you're listening to us, I want to know, we're going to leave a little question in the Spotify. What would be your last meal if there were Armageddon and who would you be sleeping with?
Honey, because these are things you have to think about with climate change. I mean, you know.
Yeah. Climate change.
The oceans are not holding up for us. Okay, no. They're not gonna like wait patiently.
Well, if we don't kill each other, the Earth will do it for us.
Truly, we could. Yeah, you're absolutely right. If we don't take care of it ourselves, we're gonna get taken care of.
And that's life.
And that's that on that.
I wonder what happened first.
But now we're gonna go take a break, and we will be back with Bill Mill. Well, welcome back from our break. It was short. It was sweet, just like us.
short games.
So I don't know if you guys have been living under a rock. I hope not. But, you know, with our conversation about the end of days, today the Oscar nominations came out. And I know you're thinking, wow, how do those things link up? And, well, the one that led the pack with the nominations was Oppenheimer. And it really does predict how the world will probably end because we started... playing with fire. Oppenheimer actually leads the pack with 13 nominations, following close behind with my personal favorite, Poor Things, with 11, and Killers of the Flower Moon with 10. Barbie earned 8, crowd fave, and Maestro, Bradley Cooper's vehicle, snagged 7 nominations. So initial thoughts, snubs, praises for people that got nominated. What are you girls thinking?
I'm a little surprised that Poor Things is it's like your favorite. That's I got to see it. I haven't seen it yet.
Got to see it.
Yeah.
It's the one you just saw it too, right?
I just saw it. Yes. I just thought it was so fun. I think Emma Stone is magical in it. I think she really does like play to her strengths in this film. I think, you know, Willem Dafoe was everyone that was given something to do in this film mm-hmm. really hits the ball out of the park. And I highly recommend it. So I'm really happy that they got a lot of love.
Yeah, I'm excited to see it.
So is this going to be Emma's year? Well, it's going to be a good year for Emma. Do you think she's going to take home a little golden man?
Well, you know, I think she's up against a couple, you know, big names. We've got Annette Bening for Naiad, yeah. Lily Gladstone, Sandra Hüller for Anatomy of a Fall, Carey Mulligan, who's always a crowd favorite at the Oscars. Mm-hmm. So there's a stacked cast. But you know, what's interesting is that Margot Robbie was left out of the best actress race at the Oscars. And, you know, people are up in arms about it on Twitter. I just read a couple things.
Yeah, it might be a low-hanging take. You know, it might be a little bit of an easy take, but I have to say I was very disappointed in the Oscars and in AMPAS and in Hollywood for not allowing for Barbie to have a bigger moment at the Oscars. Mm. Mm-hmm. I loved the movie. It's not my favorite movie of all time.
Yeah,
I'm not going to buy the Blu-ray and keep it under my pillow. But I believe in what Barbie is. Mm-hmm. And I believe in the Oscars awarding pictures that aren't just Saving Private Ryan. Yeah. The war cometh, the war taketh a film. Like, I'm just over, like, I want the Great Muppet Caper to win.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Yes.
I want films that the people love, that move people to win, because it will be affirming for American audiences.
Yeah.
Right.
If I'm not saying that Fast and the Fury 44 has to win.
Yeah.
I would want it to win something, but it's okay. I don't need it to win something. Yeah. I don't need something from the Fast and the Furious franchise to, you know, bring home the Oscar for Best Picture. But at this moment, this would have been an easy yes for the Oscars. It's a movie that has an intrinsic artistic value,
right?
And met the moment of pop culture. It met. Right. Gen Z, it met millennials, it met boomers, it met Americana by, you know, transforming and adding value to what we see as Barbie, the American brand with a capital B. Mm. So this would have been an easy yes. The fact that Margot Robbie wasn't nominated
for,
and that Greta was not nominated for Best Director is, forget about right or wrong, it's foolish. Let's take off the artistic aspect of it. It's bad business.
Yeah.
It's bad business.
I will say, I think the Academy doesn't care about any of that. I think the Academy thinks that they know better than the audience a lot of times. I think because it is such a, I mean, that's the thing also, the Academy is changing. There's a lot of younger people, but if we think about it, there's a lot of older people that are part of the Academy that are very set in their ways. True. That they know cinema, and you know, it's like Jaws's impact on cinema. Jaws was completely like not taken seriously, but it was the biggest film of the year. It was huge for Steven Spielberg. This to me feels like Greta's Jaws, you know, and it was nominated, but I do feel like there's cultural impact, and then there's artistry. And you know, also the Oscars are like very much known for not getting it right, both in who they award and who they don't award. So I feel like that's probably one of the things. But I would like to point out that they both are technically nominated, thankfully, because they're both producers on Barbie, which is nominated for Best Picture. And also Greta is nominated for Adapted Screenplay. I think it's adapted or original. I think it's adapted because Barbie was already an IP. But I do think it is a shame. Yeah, but that's also right. The thing, like with voting, it's like whoever you put at the I do believe she was probably right there. If there were like six or seven nominees, Margot definitely would have gotten in.
Yeah. And like, you know, when people say like the Academy, and like I know when I was growing up and still to this day, it's said in a way that's like it's this group, this like I think that, you know, we've got like seven judges, and it's like, you know, I'm thinking about Superman when he like taught like Kal-El, like his father, like talks to like the six who decide what happened to the planet. Exactly.
Like a panel, yeah,
exactly. And like I do really think that there's this concept that's like how it works, that like, yes, the actors vote for the actors, you know, the set designers vote for the set designers and all of that, but mm-hmm. then, and I thought this too, that like, but in a room somewhere, those seven people are like, okay, yeah, we don't agree, you know, because they are kind of, it's Wizard of Ozing. They're going, okay, right. We're going to control that dial. I guess that could be a separate conversation, but like, if we were to take that hypothesis out, the actors voted for the actors, the directors voted for the directors. And that to me is like, I think what stings the most for things like with Greta and with Margot mm-hmm. is like, the Margot one, I'm in the middle, because I walked away kind of like what you said, loving the film. It's not one of my favorites of all time, but it did move me, and it really, it stayed with me for like a day or two. But mm-hmm. I don't know that I ever thought or imagined her performance would be nominated for an Oscar. I didn't even think. I didn't think Ryan Gosling's would have been either. So
I knew he was going to get nominated.
Really?
Yes, absolutely. It. He was having so much fun. Like he just is a supporting actor. Like that is just, that role is a supporting actor dream, you know? And I think that's another thing that played into it. One of the things about Margot's performance, I think, is because she made it look so perfect. Like it was so Barbie. Yes. I think people didn't really appreciate it because we know so much about Barbie. It's like, well, yeah, that's Barbie. Margot is Barbie. But I think they didn't give her as much credit because we don't ever talk about Ken, and Ryan really made Ken his. But again, she probably was up there. The best actress category this year was a stacked category. I mean, Greta Lee was shut out as well.
That's true.
She was one of the favorites. And, you know, it really does go to show you, like, whoever makes up the Academy, the tribunal, as you would say, is, and, you know, they're not all sitting in a row, but they do talk. The girls chat and they have their little
dinners. It's more than 9,000 people.
And if you've ever read one of those, like, I think it was in the Entertainment Weekly or People, they always do every year, like, an anonymous like an Academy Awards voter talks about their ballot, and then they're just brutally honest. They're like, I thought mm-hmm. I didn't vote for Barbie because who cares? There was so much publicity. Like they say things like that. So the Oscars are not really always merit-based. I mean, we talked in the last episode about people spending $500,000 in order to campaign. Like every time I was on Twitter this past couple of months was just maestro this, maestro that. I'm like, we get it. You want this to get nominated. So yeah, but I find it weird. My biggest problem is when you vote movies like Past Lives mm-hmm. and you vote movies like Barbie as Best Picture, and those two female directors do not get nominated for Best Picture, something's not clean in the water.
Yeah, I know what, yes, but you know, it would be interesting to look up, and I'm going to look it up actually, to see, I believe this has happened with male directors where a film of theirs that was so praised and revered its year, I can't remember, but then the director was snubbed, or it was the opposite, or director was nominated, yeah, but then the picture was, you know, and so
it happens kind of all saying, the time, but exactly. both of them?
I know.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. And you know, And I didn't think another, you know, people were talking about Fantasia Barrino not being nominated for The Color Purple.
Yeah.
I think that was an oversight also. The film has its shortcomings. I don't think it needed Best Director, certainly needed better direction. But mm-hmm. I do see that's a performance that could have won. You know, we were talking about this earlier, a more general point about awards and Oscars and Tonys and Emmys. And this is, I really don't believe in people winning more than maybe twice. I think you should max out on nominations and on awards. Because what it does is it gives us, it does allow for Meryl Streep's to be created, which is important.
Right. Right.
But it would also allow for perhaps more Meryl Streep's to be created.
We have talked about this, and I yes.
You know, for example, I'm just going to give you a really good example is I really believe that on Broadway, you need big stars, right? Mm-hmm. You need stars. You need names. And one way to make someone a star is to give them a Tony Award.
Mm-hmm.
Audra has too many of them. She doesn't need any more. Oh. She is a big enough star to draw whomever she's going to draw.
Yeah.
But it would be really nice for Annalee Ashford. We need to celebritize our stars. We need to make them stars. And one way we do that is by giving them awards. The world is better for Jennifer Hudson having an Oscar. The world is better for that. Her economy is better for that. And the greater Hollywood is better for that. So diversity among winners is not only about color, it's about age and style. So, you know, a moment giving it Fantasia Barrino, a non-actress, an Oscar nomination is a moment to bring people into Hollywood, make people feel welcome. It's like what happened at the Emmys this year with such a, because of Beef.
Oh,
it's like, wow.
Wait, can you, for the listeners, Juan is talking about
this year, Beef, which took home many Emmy awards. It's a piece centered around Asian actors.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have that many people winning in one night, that kind of diversity is exciting. Now, what I'm not talking about is not just ethnic diversity, but also to Barbie as a contribution to, and it might win. Listen, it's up there for Best Picture, which is exciting. But how fun would it be for a Best Director to win for a comedy?
Mm-hmm.
So not only do I want us to rethink how many awards someone can get, how many nominations they can get in a lifetime, but also what we deem worthy to get an award. And I think that should be more than dramas.
Yeah. I mean, also it's hard because like I was saying with the trace of it all and, you know, her role on Monica and getting critically acclaimed if you have a studio behind you, like Netflix with Beef, like, you know, that has money there so they can put up ads everywhere, so they can do host screeners, so they can, you know, get send mails, all of that costs money. And if you don't have the studio behind you, because let's say if Monica were on Netflix, it would have been a different story. But Monica was with IFC, and I have no loyalty to IFC, so I can say they could have done better for Trace. Trace is just an example. The same thing goes for all of these movies. And that's the thing. There's like the name recognition of like Annette Bening, Emma Stone. Those are actresses. Those are the Emma Stone's one. Annette Bening's been nominated multiple times. Those are, you know, plus the other names attached to those projects, plus the money that is involved in getting those names out there. There's so many layers to these awards, and they're not just how they, like, it's just not merit-based. It, you know, Harvey Weinstein specifically changed the landscape when it came to Oscar campaigning. He made it a sport. He made it a political thing, and people really have held on to it. So I think they're important. I think, you know, lives could be changed. If Trace was nominated Best Actress, that would have changed her life. Probably she would have been able to go into rooms and get offered and, you know, stuff like that. So
I do have to say it. Yeah. I don't know what this says, but you guys just bringing that up, Johnny, about Trace. I literally forgot. And I was like, oh my God, wait. Yeah. She's not on that list. And that right there, I think is a problem, is that even though I literally was the one who brought her up on our last episode, and like there was this sort of momentum. But now that you say it, I'm like, oh my God, I didn't even think about it. And that's a problem. Like, yeah. I see the issue there, that like that movie kind of fell. It just, which,
well, it's wow. just, Yeah, it's hard. I mean, and that's the thing. We're always like, news is always changing. So it's like, we think about a movie one day. And then, you know, I think because Barbie was such a huge part of last year, like probably one of the only things that and Oppenheimer were like the talk of last year. There was no way that they weren't going to be included. It also just helps that they were excellent films, you know. But I do want to give like a little shout out to Colman Domingo, who is nominated for Best Actor, as well as Jodie Foster for Best Actress, Best Supporting Actress, both queer and both playing queer characters. I think that's so fucking awesome and, amazing. You know, something to celebrate.
It really is. There's a lot to celebrate here. I mean, Coleman, Danielle Brooks being nominated for Color Purple.
Yeah.
You know, Anatomy of Fall. Oh, yeah, Danielle. Beautiful film. You know, there are really fantastic performances and really good movies here. This is this kind of angst that comes up with every award season is because we care about people care, especially homosexuals. We care about art and culture and entertainment and film because it matters.
Yeah,
because we understand the importance of pop culture and art and entertainment and what it can do to sway.
Right.
So what does Erykah Badu say? I'm an artist and I'm sensitive about my shit. You know what I mean? So by the way, I started watching Naiad today. I haven't finished it.
I was going to start it today too. That's so funny. Mm-hmm.
And I talked on our text thread this morning. I was talking about Annette Bening. The performance is excellent. But four nominations is enough. You haven't won with four. You don't deserve one, mama. That's it.
Wow.
This is the fifth nomination.
That's a hot take.
That is the hottest take of all.
American Beauty, Being Julia, and The Kids Are All Right. Can we give someone else a chance? Maybe you say, you know what? I've been nominated four times and that's enough.
That's just not how it works. I'm sorry, Juan. That's not how it works. She does good work and she should be honored for it because she is Annette Bening and she does incredible work. Well, I get what you're saying, but no.
That's also the thing, Juan. What I was telling Trace too today, you know, when I called her at check to see how she was doing, I was like, you know, one of the good things about not being nominated or being snubbed is that people will then be like, no, we have to write this wrong. And I feel like in the case of, don't get me wrong, Annette Bening don't need no more money. She's good to go. Glenn Close, that money is coming in. The roles are rolling. But that doesn't change the fact that there are homosexuals that have been writing for Annette and Glenn Close and Angela Bassett to be like, give her things.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? So it's difficult because you want to give room, and especially as these women get older, and the roles you know used to historically dry up, and to see them still working and thriving, is really nice.
I know, and that's why I find it very surprising, Juan. I would almost say traitorous that you do not stand that.
Well, he's ageist.
Exactly,
he's famously ageist.
Apparently, I know you are.
Famously,
exactly.
And in a much more nuanced and relevant way than Renee Rapp. But yes, we'll continue.
Yeah, for sure. But like, I am surprised because you do tend to be like, yeah, see, I like that when you know it was bad. And so when something is really good, you know, sometimes you randomly have like taste, like this is, you're like, I liked that thing. And I just loved how like terrible she was. Like, I thought it made the moment. Those kind of things. Like I have those takes on stuff too. So knowing that and also knowing that you share a love for the greats, the dames, the patties, and you revere them, I'm always a little shocked to hear that you would I appreciate that you can change your mind and that you're like, you know what, we gotta change the rules of the game. I like that you're not so
rigid.
Exactly. Yeah. I like that. Do you like how I was going to? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is not a statement about the worth of older actresses at all.
No.
If Amy Adams had nominated five times by 40, I'd say the same.
Of course.
You know, this is about, this is really about just spreading the wealth and making Hollywood a juicier, more exciting place. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that Sydney Sweeney needs to win for this freaking rom-com. That the preview is so terrible. You know, I'm looking forward to watching it on an airplane. I saw someone tweet that, and I am very much looking forward to watching it on an airplane. I'm not saying that, but I just think this is not only not about Annette Bening, and it's not about the Grand Dames. This is not about Glenn Close's worth. I want them to work nonstop. But there is something where it's like my grandmother would say, ay, que ridícula. So ridiculous. Like showing up again? It's too much. Yeah, it's enough.
I get that. I know what you're saying.
Let's let someone else. But I get it. What do you then say?
This
is a hypothesis. And then what do you say to someone who's giving the best performance of their life? Sorry, ma'am. I know you're playing Hamlet and eating it, but we can't give it to you.
Yeah, exactly.
But life is fucking unfair.
I think that is
really what I just have a solution, and I'm just going to say it fast. Why is it that like there can be 7 to 8 nominations for certain categories, but they kept it at 5 for like the ones that, you know, you could have stretched it out.
You want to know why? Because not everyone can be a fucking winner. And that's just it. Some people have to lose and some people have to win. And that is life. Not everyone gets a trophy. And you know what? What's wonderful about this is that every year we have a similar conversation. The names just change, or we find some people and keep making it into the barrel, but it makes art exciting. This is our sports center.
This sure is
our Super Bowl. This is our moment. So I want to say to all the artists out there, if you were not nominated this year, I'm sorry, maybe next time. And if you're one of these queens like us who maybe one day hope to be part of some sort of conversation, then good for you, girl. Keep watching, keep giving your money to the cinema, and let's keep doing it. The Oscars will be, who cares, later next month.
It's always in February.
March. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Probably last week of February, because the SAG Awards are February 24th. But Trace,
we'll be there for, well, when you win, we'll be in the audience. For your first nomination, Trace Lissette will be there.
Correct. And we'll always be supporting each other, and we'll always have opinions about art because that's what it's for.
Exactly.
And if you hated the podcast, you can tell us, or you can keep it to yourself. That's the way art works.
Calling this art is really,
I know. That's why I was like
a stretch.
Listen, if people only know how long it took us to get on this call to get this audio to them, they would understand. It is art.
So hard.
It is. Best editing goes to Juan Torres Falcón for Tres Leches. Anyway, we love you all so much. Thank you for joining us on another episode of Tres Leches. We can't wait to fill you up next week.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
I'm always horny when we finish.